It's an easy thing, maybe too easy, to poke fun at groups you are not part of, and that includes age groupings. You know, baby boomers make jokes about millennials, millennials make jokes about baby boomers, and so on. Our guest this hour proposes putting aside the jokes in favor of real dialogue between age groups. Chaim Herring is the author of Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. Chaim Herring is a former rabbi and nonprofit executive, now an author, presenter, and futurist, working with nonprofits to reach their greatest impact. He specializes in faith-based communities. Chaim Herring, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
So did this book come from things you were noticing as you worked with nonprofits?
I think that it actually came from an incident that happened years ago and then spiraled back. Nobody prepares you in seminary education for the fact that one moment, you're on your knees with preschoolers. In the afternoon, you're working with teenagers. And later on, you're working with seniors. And that was over 30 years ago. Lately, though, I began hearing from teenagers and then from those who were in their 70s and up the same conversation. Nobody's listening to me. I'd like to connect with other people. I'd like to be heard. And that's when suddenly a light bulb went off. What is happening that these groups and those in the middle were saying, we feel more lonely today?
So that's interesting. So both relatively young and relatively old talking about the same sort of feeling like people didn't want to hear what they had to offer.
Yes, and we used to associate loneliness and isolation with people who are older. And what really, I would say, became concerning is that as we look at the younger generations today, they self-report greater feelings of social isolation and disconnectedness.
So let's talk about that, though, because is generational disconnection any worse, you think, now than in generations past? I mean, we were talking in the late 60s about the big generation gap that felt like it existed then between the boomers and their parents. So it has been discussed before. Do you think it is worse now, though?
I think you're making a good point. It's a fair question. Generation gaps, I think we can probably go back to ancient historians like Herodotus who talk about how things were in the good old days. There are a couple of different, I would say, attributes today that have made it worse. I'm not sure, but different. We have, for the first time in human history, six generations, and I would argue perhaps seven alive at one time. And how is it that we prepare for conversations across generations when I know somebody looks at me and I can make my smartwatch look dumb, so somebody younger might think, what can he really know? And at the same time, somebody older who actually has life experience might be able to offer something to this younger person, but there's no organic way to get people into sustained conversation. That's what's different, and also social media amplifying all of the divisions that exist.
All right, well, we'll get into the technological part of this. I do have to wonder, by now, you've probably asked younger people why, for example, they don't ask older people for input.
Well, it was quite an experience interviewing those who are millennials. And at times, I almost had to bite the tip of my tongue because I'm older than some of their parents. And when they started talking about they don't really understand what I do, they're not familiar with the internet, they don't like to have fun, they're obsessed with work, all they care about is climbing the ladder of achievement, and they don't understand why is it that I don't have a job for life like they did, even though they hated the job that they had, and don't understand that the job that I might have 3 years from now doesn't exist today.
Huh. So there's a fair amount of disconnection just in terms of understanding the challenges of each generation. There are three truths that form the foundation for the book, and I wonder if you can lay those out for us.
Yes. I don't think that this is original. I think perhaps trying to look at this through the lens of having six or seven generations maybe will amp up the conversation a little bit. The first is that we know that we need fulfilling relationships with people both our own age and across the generations if we want to live lives that are rich in meaning and purpose. The second is that it doesn't matter whether you're 18 or 80, the social and technological revolutions that are happening today, they're helping to create these powerful waves of disconnection where we all kind of hunker down into our own generational silo. And I would say the other issue is that it's hard for all of us to adapt to this state of this equilibrium. I just when we feel like we've mastered something new or worked on a relationship, something else changes again. So trying to pull that together and understand this is life today. How do we not just get through it, but how do we enjoy it and find purpose? I think that intergenerational relationships will probably be one of our best navigational tools.
All right, intergenerational, that is what we're looking for here. Is separation cultural, though, do you think, Chaim? Do we just tend to hang out with our own age group and have that reinforced by popular culture?
I think that there's something, of course, in having some, you know, enjoyment from people your own age. Right? There are certain things that stage of life, age, give you in common with other people. And I'm not suggesting that everything and everyone should be together all the time, but what do we lose by having these one-off connections with people from a different generation?
All right, so we're looking for intergenerational work here. The book is called Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. Chaim Herring is the author and our guest on The Exchange. You can join us by phone and email when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to former rabbi and nonprofit executive Chaim Herring, who is now an author, presenter, and futurist, and considers all the different people he meets of many different ages and how much difficulty they seem to have talking to one another. His book proposes ways to get them talking to one another. It's called Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. You might have a few ideas in this zone yourself. We would like to hear from you by phone at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Chaim, I wonder if generational labels might be part of the problem. I mean, when you identify somebody as a baby boomer, honestly, does somebody born in 1962 have that many differences from somebody born in 1972?
I think the labels are very good at highlighting what makes us really different and actually become conversation stoppers. And why, to your point, why can't we be perennials, right? There's certain things that happen regardless of how old you are. You hope that you take the seeds of the past, and I'm not a botanist, and I apologize to your audience members who may be, but maybe perennial, it's a beautiful metaphor. You take the seeds that have kind of died off from the last year. It's the same root system. A new variety goes, kind of let go of things that restrain us and inhibit our potential and release some new varieties. And I think we're just missing some images and some language that can sweep away the labels that really create the disconnections.
As long as we're sticking with the gardening example, and as you point out, as a city kid for the first 27 years or so of your life, you are not prone to gardening. But the fact is that you notice that a garden does pretty well when there are lots of different mixed ages of plants.
I will take your word for that. I'm a Minnesotan, but still a city kid, but it's much more interesting to look at a garden with variety than to look at a garden that has the same kind of flower.
So we should point out this book is not meant as a sociological study. This is not a deep, scholarly sort of research. But how do you hope the book works?
By sparking conversations like we're having now. Here's what I learned. And you can't see my air quotes right now, but it doesn't take an act of Congress to go up to someone, a stranger or someone you don't know well, who just might be an acquaintance that you walk by every day, and stop and say, you know, and this sounds simple, but instead of just mumbling, how are you today? I'd like to know your name. Who are you? And I've actually begun doing that. And out of that, I've developed a whole bunch of new friends that otherwise I wouldn't have.
Just by saying hello and introducing yourself.
It's that simple. And this is an action-oriented book. So there are, in every community, there are electronic platforms like Nextdoor that help connect people with one another. There are projects, conversation projects, that invite people in from the same neighborhood who, again, pass each other by, but maybe now want to take a little bit more time to get to know their neighbor. Houses of worship are, now, this is very interesting. Most of them are multi-generational, but don't realize that they could be intergenerational.
Interesting. So they do have different generations represented. That's the multi, but they don't necessarily work with each other. That would be the inter.
Yes, and it took me a while to understand how important that little nuance is. Multi-generational is a number. Intergenerational is a value. It means we're going to be intentional and not have, again, these one-off, let's bring the young people together with the old people. But we're going to actually think through how the young and old each, I would say reciprocally, contribute to discussion, to action, to work. I can give you one very concrete example.
Please.
When I think of communities and I think about how many different age groups are involved in working on issues related to hunger or housing, what would happen if instead of having these siloed efforts that are very important, that if there might be one sort of unified, even a pilot program, where the age range on the community would span high school to those who were well into their late 80s. Equal voice, equal vote, all at the same table, bringing their shared perspectives on something that matters.
And you don't see that happening so far, it sounds like. You see different groups that tend to work from different age groups?
Yes, and it might be that kids are working on feeding the hungry, and an auxiliary group might be working on the same issue, and there might be some other program within a nonprofit working on the same issue. But why not create an intergenerational ad hoc group where everybody together brings their perspective and then their shared learning? It doesn't matter how old or young you are, if your idea is good and it has legs to it and people get behind it, that's really powerful.
Chaim Herring, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's talking about the fact that we live in a multi-generational society, and he'd like to see it be intergenerational. His book is called Connecting Generations. So let's jump to your second foundational point, which is that social and technical revolutions isolate. Each generation has its own new stuff, but do you think the gulf between the boomers and the millennials is especially big?
I do. It's become very dangerous walking today because I'm afraid I'm going to bump into someone or they'll bump into me because their eyes are glued to a screen. And I think that it has become more difficult because we're retreating further into our own, I would say, silos. I think that it becomes more convenient to send an email off to someone 3 feet away when you can actually get a little exercise, stand up, walk over, have a conversation, and probably prevent a flying chain of emails where some misunderstanding has occurred when you could make eye contact with somebody and understand more quickly what a person means.
So you take on the topic of the loneliness crisis. What is it and how concerned are you about it?
Well, I'm very concerned. It's clear from numerous studies, and again, this is not an academic book, but I had to actually consume many studies, and the empirical evidence is clear. Loneliness, social isolation are the primary predictors for good health, for longevity. So, for example, if loneliness is showing up at greater reported rates among younger generations, aside from the sheer pain, which I don't know how to quantify, what are the economic costs of kids who obesity, juvenile diabetes, psychosocial issues, and then project that forward. So, yeah, I'm really concerned about that. But I also don't think it's too late that we boomers maybe can get involved.
So
need to get involved.
All right. So the point here is that lonely people are not really healthy people. And there's really kind of a yikes thing in here about what people report about the numbers of close confidants. Not a very high number, it sounds like.
Not really, and it's been declining since the 1980s. I mean, I was thinking today, for example, for those who remember the book by P.D. Eastman, Are You My Mother? So what happens with Siri, Alexa, Cortana? Does a young child at the age of 3 or 4 begin to think, are you my mother? Just because you get an answer, you get a response. And what does that do if that kind of interaction, and I'm not anti-technology, by the way.
Okay.
I mean, I love to be able to connect with relatives whom otherwise I wouldn't be able to see. And I know people who move from another country can connect with members of sometimes a village, which is so, so important. But at the same time, we have to look at the other side, and that is the side that takes away some of our autonomy. And are we educating our children to think that right now it's just a voice, but what happens when the voice is like that hologram from the first Star Wars movie, except it interacts with you?
Yeah, you provide some interesting discussion points. Chaim Herring is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the author of Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. You can join the conversation on the exchange. You might have some thoughts of your own about working with people in other age groups or not. 800-838-3760 to share a story here on the Jefferson Exchange. 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we talked a bit about technology already, but let's talk about life experiences just a bit, Chaim, because these differ obviously more than just technology. Like, so for example, how different is the economy that the baby boomers experienced versus the one that their kids, the millennials, live in?
that's where I think a lot of conflict comes up. The Organization Man, you know, that was a title of a book, I think, in 1956. But that image of sticking with the company, getting the golden watch that symbolized freedom, because now time was yours. You got to control it instead of it controlling you. 40% of older boomers stayed with one employer for more than 20 years. They had job security. Millennials are accused, I think, unfairly of being job hoppers, right? They're working with this gig economy where they have to constantly be thinking about, well, what skills do I need to upgrade so that I'm ready for the next change? And not only that, millennials are critiquing boomers. And I think with some justification, they watch their parents either dislike their job, outsource, downsize, have their benefits cut as well for some of them. And they're asking themselves, is this really all that there is to life? I mean, yes, work is important, but who says that work and fun are incompatible? Boomers talk about a bucket list, and what I've seen is that millennials want to kick the bucket. They don't know if they're going to be well and healthy, if they can have, you know, a nice weekend and go away to some exotic destination. They'll do it. And I think that boomers need to take a look at millennials and say, we did not buy you from Amazon. Right? We raised you, parents, educators, community members. So what is it that you see in us that you're saying maybe you want to do differently this time? And I think we have to cut them just a little bit more slack, because we had the Organization Man. I would say they're more like nomadic workers.
Mm-hmm. Not by choice, as you point out. I mean, their jobs do change. And, you know, as long as we're talking about the boomers and millennials here, because obviously we come back to this again and again, how big are those cohorts? I mean, how big are these generations of people in American society?
Well, millennials have now surpassed boomers in terms of size for obvious reasons. They were, until a few years ago, about equal in number. But we're roughly looking at about 77, 78 million for millennials and a little bit lower number for boomers.
All right. So reasonably close, but very large cohorts of people. One of the fascinating things in your book, Chaim, is that you asked many boomers and millennials some of the same questions. And I wonder how much the responses tracked or differed.
So one thing that I only asked millennials, because I know that you don't ask questions that you know the answer to. And for boomers, I knew the answer to this one. But one question that I only ask millennials is, if you could work at a job for 5 years, a legal job, and you wouldn't be able to retire after you finished working at that job, but you would be financially secure enough to do whatever you wanted for the rest of your life, but it was a job that had no personal meaning and that you didn't like, would you do it? And everyone, without hesitation, said, well, I can't repeat everything some of them said, but it was, are you kidding me? Why would I want to do that? And of course, as boomers, we thought this is the way we climb the ladder of achievement, rung by rung. Fun. Although if you listen to millennials, they'll tell you we're not much fun to be around. That was for the weekend, for vacations, and for retirement. So I think that that's really a big difference, and it's not of their making. The economy is definitely different.
I do get the sense, though, that each generation, in its generalizing about the other, often accuses the other of behavior that is not entirely unlike its own.
Well, maybe some of that will show up. But sometimes there are these big break points. And again, it's very, very risky to say this time is different from any other time before. I think that's exaggerated. But I just think these two factors of having people who are so very old in large numbers and so very young is a big game changer. And I think that this ongoing churn and disruption, right, and I don't see that going away anytime soon. So learning how to adapt to ongoing change where there's less continuity and more discontinuity, those, I think we're just learning how to manage them.
Well, one of the things that jumped out, though, was didn't you have both millennials and boomers identifying the other generation as the one that felt entitled?
Yes. So this is where I had to really listen, and I think that's part of the issue that we're talking about, because part of having a conversation is also being prepared to listen to things that you may not necessarily agree with. I asked millennials, when you hear the word boomer, what comes to mind? And their answer was bucket list, work-obsessed, goal-driven, tough and tenacious, and entitled. When I asked the opposite question of boomers, when you hear millennials, what words come to mind? It was kick the bucket, you're pleasure seekers, apathetic snowflakes with no grit, and you're entitled.
Wow. Okay. So we got the generalities out on the table. We'll come back and talk more about how the generations can bridge those generalities and understand each other better as individuals. The book is called Connecting Generations. It's the work of Chaim Herring. And we will come back to the Jefferson Exchange and take your phone calls and emails in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. I want to thank you for listening and remind you we're talking to Chaim Herring, a former rabbi and nonprofit executive, now author, presenter, futurist, works with nonprofits to achieve greater impact, specializes in faith-based communities. He's written a book about the work he's done in noticing what it's like to work with people of different generations. He proposes bringing us all together. His book is called Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. You're welcome to join the conversation by phone or email on the Jefferson Exchange and throw your 2 cents worth in on the topic of generations getting along. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You know, it occurred to me just a moment ago, Chaim, to ask about what, for example, the boomers make of what the millennials think of them, because I think when the boomers were young, a lot of the things that they say about millennials were said about them by their elders.
I remember some of those conversations.
Yeah, you're just pleasure seekers, you're just in it for fun, that kind of stuff?
Well, yes, and why can't you do what I did? So in that regard, the conversation has a similar strand, and I think it's time for boomers just to chill a little bit, think back to some of those conversations, and they actually did okay. Right, that was the generation that said, "Don't trust anyone over 30," and now it's like they're saying, "Don't trust anyone who is at least 60." Mm-hmm. So I think we need to pull back a little bit and to let them, just like we're finding new off ramps into working full time. We're not working at all. And boomers don't like the word retirement, by the way, right? They feel entitled, to your earlier point of not using the word retirement. So why don't we let millennials actually find new on-ramps into becoming adults in their way?
Well, and that's interesting because part of the book that surprised me a bit was the idea that millennials think a bit differently about adulthood and how they grow into it.
I didn't realize that adulting was a verb until I spoke with more millennials. And for boomers, an adult was something you became sometime between 18 and 23. But for millennials, adulting means that they're practicing becoming adults. Now, I don't know if they've read this concept of delayed adulthood. I don't know whether or not that has real merits to it or not. But I think it speaks to the idea of growing up taking longer, which makes sense because we're also living longer, and because all of the changes going on in terms of our society, in terms of technology, education, and jobs. So they are adulting. And eventually, and I trust them, they will become adults, but they're going to do it in their way.
So I want to move on from the specific generational attributes, self-thought or thought of others, and come on to the concept of community, because it is central to the book. And I wonder how differently the generations describe community and what that means to them.
I'm hoping that there's a pendulum swing that we might be seeing right now. One thing that boomers and millennials, at least the ones whom I interviewed and just speak with, agree upon, is that it's time for more face-to-face conversations, moving from FaceTime to face-to-face time and sitting down together. Boomers and millennials, and I heard something really fascinating from a millennial who started a technology company. He said, I think that in some ways, technology has been great for your outer ring of friends. You can follow birthdays, Halloween parties, Christmas parties. But then he added, but it might have hurt some of my inner ring of friends and family members, because now I can just check Facebook, I can send a text instead of having a conversation. And I heard from boomers, one of them said, if you have or are in a relationship with a significant other, get off of Facebook now or it will ruin it. So when I began to hear that from both generations, it actually gave me just a little bit more hope that maybe this is new territory and we're learning how to live with it a little bit more intelligently.
You, we pointed out that you tend to work with communities of faith, and as you've already mentioned, they do tend to be not intergenerational. What's the other? The multi-generational. So there are multiple generations represented in church. They're not necessarily intergenerational, though. I wonder if you find, Chaim, that younger people just want different kinds of associations. I mean, you know, like the fact that the lodges have declined over years because they're just viewed as places where old guys hang out.
They do, and I also think that just like we were entitled to create our own kinds of expressions of faith or not of faith, but to do things differently, I think that we should be a little bit more secure and trusting of them and let them figure out what it is that they're also searching for. That's very difficult for established, and I think it's not just churches and synagogues and mosques, but I think nonprofits that are used to doing things a certain way. But think about it. If you're a millennial, if a boomer implicitly says to you, we'd love for you to be involved, but essentially, you learn meetings are at a set time and agendas are not given out in advance and work that could be done beforehand is done at the meeting, and you find that you're making incremental change, then here's the question I've been hearing them ask, and I think it's faith-based communities and I think it's nonprofits in general. If I can pick a cause, mobilize people around it, and raise funds for it and have more immediate impact, why should it take 10 years for me to ascend the ladder of leadership to only find out that you want incremental change? That's not a very appealing invitation.
So it was definitely some worldviews that need to be examined a little more carefully that the other possesses. What kinds of exercises, Chaim, do you propose to get each generation to think better of the other, or at least to explore more of the other?
Well, I think that there are things that can happen on the local level that really don't take a lot of work. For example, there are some communities that are really looking at the issue of housing and how this concept of, you know, let's put the seniors, and this was meant compassionately, by the way, with varying degrees of wellness on a campus, like far removed from neighborhoods, where there are people that they could interact with, but putting preschools inside of senior centers, instead of thinking of, when a building goes up, a senior center, but a community center that can accommodate young and old, an intergenerational community center is another example. I'll tell you a beautiful story that I heard about a housing complex for seniors, Judson Manor. It's in Cleveland, and it's a high-end senior living facility. Some board member came up with the idea of having some students from the music school nearby. These are kids, young adults in their 20s, right? Open up free apartments to them under certain circumstances, give concerts, share meals, you know, vetted very carefully. And I remember watching a video of the person who was in charge of this residence saying, do I really want to be in charge of a senior residence and an RA of a college dorm? And suddenly, and again, it takes intentionality, one story of a young woman who was a resident there, I believe she played a string instrument, wound up getting engaged and invited one of the elderly residents to be her flower girl. Proximity, intentionality, trying to think about activities and initiatives that young and old can each benefit from each other. Technology can be actually a bridge. There are programs called Teeners, where teens might teach those who are older and a little bit more unaccustomed with technology how to use it better. But then that older person recognizes, because they have a relationship, maybe something looks a little off about that teen today, and can have that discussion that a parent or a teacher can have or doesn't have time for. These conversation projects on the community level. And again, start small, take a few risks, and some wonderful things are likely to happen.
Yeah, saying hello would certainly be a good way to start. And you do talk about reclaiming small talk in the book. In fact, you did this in a co-working space you share. Tell us that story.
Yes, it was about 6 months before the 2016 elections. And I just felt like things were becoming just toxic. And I knew that I couldn't change the political discourse. So I thought, what can I do that's empowering, that could make maybe a small difference and perhaps have a multiplier effect? And that's when I began to try to make it a practice to ask a few people with whom I had regular contact, because I saw them in my co-working space or around my office, what's your name? What do you do? Can we have a cup of coffee together? I'd like to get to know you. It sounds like what you do is interesting. And I made sure that it was someone who didn't look like me and wasn't my age.
And have you kept connections with those people?
Yes, with several of them. Unfortunately, some of them, you know, have moved on, hopefully for some things that they're finding more fulfilling. But yes, and I really enjoy it.
So if people get discouraged, they get to, you know, it's no use, you know, I'm trying and they won't talk to me. I mean, how should we proceed?
Then what I would say is invite them, someone who has a vision of what an intergenerational community can be and how enriching those relationships can be when they go in both directions, invite them to volunteer with you for some intergenerational activity. Invite them to try and become a mentor to a younger person. Invite them to find a cause that matters to them that they maybe they cared about when they were younger. Life took over. Now they have the time and maybe the motivation to get back to it. If you're afraid to do it alone, then find someone else who has a little bit more confidence and experience.
Given, Chaim, the age of high polarity in American society, I wonder if we should not be surprised about the polarity between generations or the fact that there are there's distances between us.
It's definitely part of the broader environment that we're in, but I am a naive optimist. And just like we got ourselves into this situation, I think we can get ourselves out of this situation.
So again, the three basic truths that form the foundation for the book, we need all ages. That's number one. Number two, that societal and technical revolutions tend to isolate. We've certainly been through a technical revolution. And there is disequilibrium at all ages, as you point out. So we all need people, and it sounds like it can expand your focus of the kinds of people you need.
I think so, and empathy happens when you make eye contact with people. That's where you feel the impact of a word, of a smile. What we have now is social inaptitude, more apps to connect, but they've disconnected us. So let's keep technology in check, use it wisely, and remember human empathy and intergenerational connection.
Be Human. The book is called Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer Gen X and Millennial Divide. It's the work of Chaim Herring. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right, take care.